My self-care has evolved in a way of like just really trying to be more authentic. Days where I'm feeling really sick, or days where the grief becomes overwhelming and my body says, hey, this is what you have the capacity for, and we're not going to push harder, okay? Can you do that for us? And for me to listen and say, okay, you know, day needs to be, today I need to rest, and people may be disappointed, or, you know, I may need to explain, but it's okay. Or like, oh, I'm afraid of something, and so I'm not going to go to this thing, or I'm not going to go do this because I'm feeling some anxiety. So I'm going to withdraw, even though I know I have the energy and the capacity to do this. That's also not honoring me. You know what I mean? That's avoiding. So like, really just getting more into self-reflection and authenticity, I feel like, has become self-care.
Stories are powerful, powerful.
Welcome to the Rise, Recover, Live podcast, brought to you by The Phoenix. This is a space where people impacted by substance use can come to share their story of strength and resilience, get open and honest, and inspire hope and build community through shared experience.
We'll be talking to people in our community on their own recovery journey and shine a light on the topic of recovery in all its forms. Maybe you'll hear some of your story in theirs.
Let's show the world that together we rise, recover, and live.
Welcome, everybody, to yet another episode of the Rise, Recover, Live podcast. We are your host, Bryce III, he, him pronouns.
Liz Bikin, she, her pronouns.
Liz, what's up? How's your energy?
My energy is settling. It's been a little bit of a anxiety-laden day for no reason except for it's like that limbo time. We're recording this towards the end of the year, that like between like holiday-ish, almost New Year's kind of time. And I think my little brain is like, what can we worry about? I'm sure there's something.
I got a quiz for you, Liz. What day is it?
That's a mean thing to ask me.
Can I jump in?
It's Thursday. We record on Thursdays.
That's how you know. That's how
a friend.
That's how you know. That's how you know it's that time of the year. And you know, I think it's interesting that this conversation that we're about to have, because the guest that we have on today before we got the camera rolling, I had mentioned that she was a bit not grounded. And I think that this will be a grounding conversation, a exercise and a practice for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. Are you feeling grounded? Do we have one of three of us feeling grounded today?
I don't think I'm ever, like, I'm grounded in the not being grounded. Like, I float, you know? Like,
so
I,
we're flying on the
really
but
need to
but
put,
you're captain. You need, can be captain of the airplane.
I need to put the copper in my pocket. But I'm good, though. I'm good. I'm straight. Like, even when things are what they are, like, I'm able to show up and steer the ship. So, it's one of my comparative advantages. Usually this is the point where I say, who do we have here today, Liz? But I think I'll take the lead on that. Today, we have a really good friend of mine. The way that this invite worked, which may be news to Liz because she was trying to figure out how this guest knew this show. But I was going on Facebook and I was scrolling through my timeline and I seen that this person in 2023 had just discovered podcasts and was like listening to podcasts for the first time. Maybe she had been recommended podcasts before, but now she's really like getting into it. And so she was asking, I don't know if like the post was asking for recommendations. And instead of giving a recommendation, I hopped in the comments like, do you want to be on one? And of course, because of the way that we know each other, she had to say yeah, because she had no other choice, because that's what we do. We say yeah to these things and we show up. Beyond that, this person is has been through some stuff and has been open and honest about it since the first moment we met. Was a part of a group of people that when I first met them, was introduced to them through young people in AA. They just were welcoming, brought me in, gave me a seat on the board, and like just treated me like they had known me. And it was a testament to not only like the community aspect of recovery, but just like that thing where I've said on the show multiple times, like, damn, I haven't even met everybody who's going to love me yet. And this was an example of like you've been in the corner and you meet a whole new family that has been waiting on you to be a part of them. And so I'm excited to have Mary Long on the show today and to get the audience that listens to our podcast a glimpse into like my friend network and my community. So Mary, how are you? How's your energy today?
Well, as discussed before we hit the record button. It's been a whirlwind, somewhat of a 24 hours. I was up visiting my oldest brother at his house for a little Christmas. And I hadn't been there in, I hadn't been to his house in about 4.5 years. A lot of factors were happening in my life personally. Then there was the COVID situation. And then I actually took a little pause from my relationship with him for a little while due to some things that I needed to take a break from in our relationship. And this is the first time I've been to his house since. So it was like the launching into 2024 on like a higher plane of forgiveness tour a little bit. So I had gotten home from being up north approximately 12 minutes before we started. So my energy is wild. My energy is vibrating at some highs, some lows, and some in-betweens. I'm going to help myself a little bit. I did get a caramel cold brew.
Yeah, I was going to say, you say that as you crack a cold brew. That,
but wait. It contains adaptogens with lion's mane and reishi mushrooms. So you know what? The mushrooms are in there. It's going to all do what it needs to do.
Mushroom coffee for the win.
Mushroom this is a health and wellness coaching podcast now from starting now. And, you know, we're not sponsored by that beverage, but open to it.
I did not say the brand. There was no brand name.
And we won't until the dollars roll in. Just kidding. Completely just kidding. But sounds delicious. And
yeah that's,
well, that's where I'm at.
That's a hell of a journey. Yeah. I've had conversation with people. I don't know, like for me, I don't have like a huge family that I know of. I feel like I have a bigger family than I may even know. But like that thing, like I've met people that their own, like their own brother, their own cousin, it's like, you know, he did that thing to me and I don't have a brother anymore. And like, there's been ways that like I've had to learn to show up for my dad in different ways. And it's like, the intentional living or the recovery or whatever you want to call it, like continues to ping on my heart where it's like, yo, you got to keep reaching out. You got to figure out how to make sure that your side of the street is straight. You know,
I'm not gonna lie. Initially when I'm not going to get into the nitties and the gritties, but you know, initially when the thing had happened, I was on that. Don't have a brother trajectory, you know what I mean? The initial hurt and the initial pain and all that. But, you know, I think that feelings and spirituality, they do what they're going to do and they evolve and they change. And, you know, I'm a mental health professional. I go to a mental health professional. I am a sponsor. I have a sponsor, you know what I mean? So there's a lot of, moving parts that don't really allow me to do cut and runs. You know, it does allow me to take care of myself and take pauses from relationships. You know what I mean? It does allow me to put myself in a safe place from somebody for as long as I need to and let that evolve into what it's going to. And there was about a year where I didn't have a relationship with this person and that needed to happen for that amount of time. But
And I think that's important for like us to hear, because there could also be that thing where the intentionality is an overdrive where it's like, okay, like I gotta clean my side of the street, I gotta show up and fix it, but it's like if first of all I gotta allow myself this space to even figure out, because sometimes like I'm way too close, like even with and my dad don't listen to this podcast, but if he did, I didn't care. But like even with my dad, like there's times where like I gotta take space in order to be able to show up with compassion and understanding. Otherwise, I'm too close, and it's not gonna be good for neither one of us. So like to give myself this space, and it might be a day, a week, it might be some months. At times in my life, it's been years, you know. But that's allowed for me to be the person that can show up and contribute to that relationship. I think my question for you is, have you always been this way? Have you always been this intentional about your relationships? And where did that come from?
Oh, goodness gracious. Actually, the answer to that would be a mixed bag. I think that if I were to be honest, it's probably very much the opposite of that. I know that my family probably at some point will listen to this podcast, so that's cool. I come from a little bit of a codependent dynamic. And so I think that it's been difficult for me, like in my life, to say how I feel for fear of conflict or someone being unhappy, right? So I feel like even after like getting sober, you know what I mean? Like the intention was like there, and the idea of like having healthy relationships was within me. But the modeling and the, you know what I mean? And the generational, you know, kind of like, all right, just make sure everybody's happy and, you know, all, you know, nothing to see here kind of situation was still really present. So, I mean, not to mention, you know, you throw in some of the like self-esteem and insecurity that like probably led me to the drinking in the first place, you know what I mean? And all the other things, the traumas leading up to where I was. And I actually really did a lot of opposite of like setting boundaries for a long time. So it's really only been probably in the last like maybe 5 or so years that I really have tried to be more intentional about boundaries and what's good for me and what's not good for me, and working on expressing that like in a loving way, but that's also clear and assertive, you know what I mean? But that isn't damaging, you know? And that's not always easy, especially when it comes to family. Been a journey. I actually was having a conversation with my mom about that on the way home. You know, I was actually telling her, my mom's 75. My parents are both in recovery as well, because it's, you know, it's a family joint. And, I was having a conversation on the way home. I said, you know, it's not too late. We can change the whole direction. I was like, you know, mom, blah, 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 this one situation, you know, if you would have just said how you felt, then we could have done this, this, and this, and that. And she heard me. She was like, you know what? You're right. And so we made a little joke about Terminator mom, you know, from now on, laying the hammer of the law, you know, obviously joking around. I was like, you know, I said, no, I think... as a family, we should probably just find a happy medium, you know, somewhere in the middle.
And we're all great at that.
I feel like yeah, we're great at finding the middle, aren't we?
The dream. It's good to aim for. It doesn't always happen. I feel like the thing that's so powerful about, I mean, everything that you've said, but just allowing things to just not be linear and not to be static. You know, I mean, the fact that like at one point you were like, maybe I don't have a brother. I don't, you know, this relationship is over. And then to just, I don't know, have that strength to be able to look at it and be like, okay, well, I don't really feel that way anymore. You know, so let's look at it again from the perspective that I'm at now. And man, I think about the community that we're in, you know, just this recovery community overall, and how many times we said things like, I will never use again. And, you know, and that wasn't the case. And then also a lot of us, I think we're probably on the other end of someone being like, you are dead to me. I'm cutting you off forever. Like enough. And to, I don't know, just see you model that it's possible to have things change. It's possible to have said something and then later be like, that's no longer where we're at, you know? And, you know, even if you've said those ultimatums, even those ultimate like things have been said within a family dynamic, like it's okay for that to still shift, and it's possible. And
you know, what's interesting, like the language.
Yeah.
So when you live away, like there's a way that you learn how to communicate it, and you'll learn how to get around people that have that conversation. Mm. So with you using terminology like cut and run, or the way that you describe like boundaries and your relationship with boundaries, it's indicative of the work that you've done and being the person that does that work leads you to other people who do that work, as well as like platforms to share that work. But there's going to be somebody who hears this podcast and is going to be like, cut and run. That's what I do. I can cut and run.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I never knew what to call it. I just knew like what I did, And then to hear you describe like why you did it. Like, yeah, of course. I just didn't want nothing to do with it because I felt unsafe and I didn't know what to do with that, you know? So yeah. But like with that language, when we can see something, then now we could do something about it. So like, does that come from like being a mental health professional? Like what type of mental health professional are you? Do you get that from the work that you do with your mental health professional? Let us know.
Well, I will say first off that cut and run is not, from what I said earlier, like that's not normally my bag of tricks. So, you know, the sit and stay is probably more so my normal. I'll just stay here until the wheels fall off and everyone's bleeding is mostly been my MO. So I think that developing boundaries also comes with balance. And I will say that like in that whole process, like with my therapist and everything, there was letters I wrote, you know, I wrote him letters. There was letter writing. You know what I mean? There was time, there was careful consideration. You know what I mean? And things weren't quick, but things are not supposed to be sometimes. You know what I mean? I think that like as a, you know, person that does suffer from, you know, wanting immediate gratification and wanting things to be better right away, that the process is not always our strong suit. You know what I mean? The the waiting and the patience and the process and getting from point A to point B, not at the speed that I would like, is not comfy. So I do feel a sense of gratitude and pride, you know, towards the work that I've done to be able to do that in this situation and hopefully other situations moving forward. But I went to school for social work, and I have worked for 15 years as a school social worker in a variety of high school and middle school settings. I have been at a high school for the last 9 years. Education has its ups and downs. The education system as a whole, we're not going to jump down that rabbit hole together, so we'll leave that there.
I need to fix that in 30 minutes. We've got a little bit of time.
I'll just jump in. We'll fix that real quick. You guys got 20 minutes to fix the education system? Let's do it.
If anybody can.
Let's go. So I've been doing that for 15 years. And then recently, in the last year and a half, I did join a private practice and have been doing therapy at this private practice for the last year and a half. And I found a really, really strong passion in that. So that's the direction that my life's probably going to be heading in. Once some other fiscal responsibilities are taken care of, you know, sometimes
that destination is always takes a little bit of some things just have to be figured out. In the meantime.
Yeah. You know, sometimes education, my original education to be where I'm at had some costs, you know. We also are not going to get into the conversation of fixing the student loan industry in the next 20 minutes either. So we'll just leave that there too. But
that'll be great too.
So that's the eventual goal. So yeah, so I do work in the mental health field as a social worker. I also have kind of run the mental health department at this school for the last 2.5-3 years. I'm really grateful to the private practice that I was able to join.
So when you started talking about the process of getting from point A to point B and then suffering from like wanting instant gratification, it touched like something in my soul in a way that was like, it was like a breath I can exhale, because like, oh, okay, I'm not the only one that's going through that right now. You know, as long as I've been having this experience, like I still need that constant reminder that I'm not the only one that's going through this right now. And I think when we share our practice with others, like that's that thing, because we can go to school and we can learn how to show up for other people, which equips us to be able to better show up for people and to be informed in certain ways, trauma informed and all type of stuff like that. And that extra little piece of like I've had a personal experience that can serve me to serve you, I think, as that little extra oomph. So I'm wondering, has that been advantageous for you as you've worked as a social worker in the schools and now in your private practice? Like, does your own personal recovery translate into your work and how?
I feel like it would be literally impossible for it not to, you know? My own personal experience shapes me as a person, and who I am as a person is translated into my purpose with other people. There is a part of some recovery literature, you know, that kind of talks about, you know, our paths and our experience being our greatest asset to others. And I definitely believe that, like, full-heartedly. I think that, you know, in the beginning of kind of transforming into this new life and kind of rising from the ashes into, you know, this new person, you know, when I was new in recovery, you know, the idea that, like, I would ever feel any type of use or purpose from the utter demoralization, you know what I mean, and chaos that I created was very, very far from my mind, you know, not really very tangible to me. But I feel that tangibility on a daily basis the longer that I've been sober. I don't want to call recovery programs CBT program. I will say that they are CBT adjacent. CBT stands for cognitive behavioral therapy. And basically what that is that, you know, you take your thoughts as they relate to your personal experience, and then you have a feeling as a result of those thoughts, right? And that feeling drives your actions. And that if you look at why you have those thoughts and what the evidence is for those thoughts or against those thoughts, that you can take that and you can transform into a different perspective if you give yourself the time to look at that evidence and look at those fears, right? Mm-hmm. And to anybody in the recovery community, that sounds very familiar.
that's CBT, baby.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that in a lot of instances, you know what I mean? That, you know, the idea of resentment and fear is something that comes up with people that are not in the recovery community. You know, I think that resentment and fear and the actions that we take as a result of that is something that every human on the planet deals with. You know what I mean? The experience of trauma and the experience that they've had in their life that shape the fears and actions that they take as they get older, you know, especially with the teenagers that I work with, you know what I mean? They have a lot of truly, truly difficult life experiences very young, you know what I mean? And start to develop these defects and coping mechanisms and survival skills, you know what I mean? As a result of their fears that their life is going to continue to be like this, you know? And I think that my experience, not only as a youth of that variety myself, you know what I mean? But also, you know, in overcoming those things has been a really great asset. You know, the clients that I work with, you know, the idea of resentment and fear is based on, you know, past trauma and what they've been through and all that stuff, you know, and working through that. I think that my experience getting through some of those things, both prior to recovery and post, you know what mm-hmm. I mean, are assets. And so, you know, I think that it all kind of, I don't know, I think it's all kind of meshed together in like a really beautiful way. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I didn't foresee my life being this impactful when I first started my recovery journey. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. like the depths of how everything would come together in very beautiful ways and very painful ways as well. You know what I mean? Was something that I would have never been able to picture. You know, it really is just all tied together in a way that solidifies my spirituality, solidifies my purpose, you know what I mean? Mm. And really, I think, probably makes me even more useful in my role in the mental health community because of the darkness, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think, at least in my experience, like, not only the stuff that I had been through pre-recovery, not only does that stuff serve me to be able to serve others, but also, and maybe even more pertinently, so if that's a word.
Ooh, good word.
It is the stuff that I experience now that I'm tapped into the process, like now that I'm in it, and you know, the resentments that I can have now to, you know, the student loan industry, or my cousin, or this person that, you know, like this, now that I have the tools of like a CBT, or that I have the tools of the, you know, acceptance and commitment therapy, or I had the tools of like 12-step programming, or I have the tools of, and I still have to like show up on a daily basis to like allow for life to be life on life's terms, and to contribute not only to the health of me, but to the health and wellness of those around me. Like, that is a big part of what aids me to be a contribution to my community. And like, I know that you've had some like health challenges like in your life in recovery. And, you know, we've talked about it. I've talked to you on, you know, good days, and I've talked to you on not so good days, and that's always been a thing that I admire about you, like that experience, because I pull a lot from that, where it's like, oh, okay, well, if this person can show up because of this experience, then like, I can show up. I can continue to show up. And I don't think you know like how much, like you might post something on Facebook and I might not even say nothing. You know, I might just put a little heart in the comments, but like that'll be something that aids me in being able to show up and be strong in my life. So if you care to share like some of the things that you've experienced in that realm, and how you show up for that aspect of your life.
Well, when I was 7 years old,
we got limited time.
No, but realistically, I've had a journey with autoimmune disease for a long time. You know, I was diagnosed with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis when I was 7 years old. It was so advanced at a young age, I couldn't walk for a year in second grade. I spent 3 days a week at physical therapy and physical therapy at home. I do strongly believe that the trauma of childhood illness impacted me pretty greatly, you know, not to mention, you know, the childhood illness plus, you know what I mean? Like my parents, you know, I had a brother who also suffered from autoimmune illness when he was really young too. You know, my parents, you know, we didn't have money growing up, you know what I mean? And needing, you know, assistance with pills and prescriptions and having to go to, you know, different programs to get help with that. You know, it's just a lot of strain. But yeah, so it started kind of young, and, you know, that kind of like went into remission after a while. And then about 12, 13 years ago, I did get diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, which is another autoimmune illness. And it did kind of progress to Crohn's disease over time. About a year and a half ago, my rheumatoid arthritis did come back in a very serious way. So, you know, it's funny too, because so autoimmune illness, you know, the way that it works is that your white blood cells attack your body because they're confused. And one of the things that exacerbates your white blood cells to do so is stress. So my doctors like to say this really funny thing about, you know, have you worked on not being stressed out? I find... We swear on this podcast. Hilarious.
Are you stressed right now?
who is this doctor who has solved stress and it's across the country?
Have you tried just not being stressed? So, you know, okay. It's kind of like, oh, I just found a pamphlet on the coffee table that said, "Have you tried not breathing today?"
Oh my God.
Oh God. So, there have been days, you know, I have days where, I've gone 4 or 5 days without being able to eat. You know what I mean? Like just the whole gambit of thing. You know what I mean? Not being able to really walk well for days, you know, things like that. And so I think that it's really being a person who has, you know, recovered from hopelessness, right? Mm-hmm. In some self-imposed ways, right? But, you know, also, you know, we don't just become alcoholics because it sounds like a fun thing to do. But like having someone, like being someone who's recovered from being hopeless, right? And then being faced with something that also feels very hopeless, that is like not really anything that I can control. I think that sometimes my mind battles between the, it's okay to not do anything today. Like it's okay to allow yourself to be sad, to not care, to just feel sick. You know what I mean? Blah, 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 blah. And then the other part of me that says, hey, guess what? You have choices today. What is yours going to be? How much will you let this run your life, right? And so the balance between like self-care and self-motivation, you know what I mean? Or the balance between like loving yourself and pushing yourself. I think that like when you suffer from like a chronic illness, those two sides, like the battle of those things are like in high gear, like on a regular basis. And so, you know, who's going to win, or can we both win, you know, or like what, back to like the original, like the, where's the middle? Do we even know where it is? Can we find it? Do we want it? You know, like, do I want the middle today? You know, there's people in my life who have other chronic illnesses, people very close to me, who've suffered from similar things, who let it take over, you know what I mean? And we're gonna not work, or we're gonna, you know what I mean? Like things of that nature, which, you know, everybody's got their own journey and everybody makes their own choices based on what they need. You know what I mean? But for me, it almost feels like it isn't a choice most days. Like, and not because like I don't allow myself to have like days where it's like, you know what, we're gonna do our best. And if our best looks like we went into work 2 hours late because we weren't feeling well and we took some time and like we got off and maybe we answered some texts and watched some TV, like that's cool. You know what I mean? It's kind of hard when you have two jobs, but we're not gonna launch into how much that is. Probably not the best right now. But yeah, you know, but at the same time, it's like, I know what I want and I know where I want to be. And I have the tools to access the medical help that I need. I have the tools to like continue to see doctors and seek answers and to get better. And the way that I have learned in recovery in my own like mental health journey is that like, if you have the tools and you have been given the courage to change the things that you can and you choose not to, you're probably not going to be happy, even if it's not your fault. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, that's a big one.
That sucks sometimes.
That's a big one.
I didn't choose the circumstance, but I could probably choose parts of the outcome.
Yeah.
And that's like not very easy all the time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I've had
that. I mean, I guess we could apply that statement to a lot of things, right?
Yeah. Because there's a lot, you know, and there's a lot. It's like, you know, this is the cards that I was dealt. And I could point at these cards and be like, yo, this fucking sucks. Like, why did I get this hand? And really, there's energy that goes into that. Like, there's a lot of energy that goes into like, man, this, like, if I could have just, or if, you know, and look at you, and you're in such a better position than me, and in comparison, like, if I had your life, there's energy that goes into that. Like, a there lot is. Of energy. So if I could take that energy and redirect it, I think that's why Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning, why that really hit how I did when I first read that, is because like, this guy was in the worst sick situation you could ever be in. Like, I'm at this point, I was working at one of the big three, like a plant here. I had just got sober maybe like a year or two. And then I really started to ask myself, what do I want? And it's not what I'm doing right now. But like, I'm listening to this guy's story, and you know, he's in this concentration camp and his whole family's in there. His wife early on, like, you know, she didn't make it. It got to a point where like they shaved his head. They shaved all the hair on his body, took all his possessions, all of his everything. and he was still able to like find that thing that is like, okay, well, what can I do? what can I do? And he went to length to like observe like when people gave up, you know, and had decided like there's nothing more we can do and that this sucks and I give up, you know. And a big part of that was like, he said he would notice that the people would smoke their cigarettes back to back. And when they did that, like, it's like, okay, yeah, he out of there. Within a day or two, they'd be out of there, you know? And it's just like that hope or that faith with that extra splash of responsibility. You know, I think that's like one of the biggest gifts that recovery has given me is like responsibility in the way of having the ability to respond to what life brings. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was inherent in my experience before I became a person in recovery, because before, like, mm-hmm. I'm looking for things outside of me to quell and help and get rid of and help me not think about it and shirk my ability to respond. And if something happened that I had to respond to, I'm responding very interestingly. You know,
that's a great adjective for that. Interesting.
But no, that's super motivational and inspirational. And so how do you take care of you as you show up? So first of all, like, just one piece of your story, like beyond like the autoimmune stuff, like beyond even like, you know, the familial stuff, but like just working at a high school, like alone is enough to make somebody go crazy. So like, how do you take care of yourself enough that you can show up for all these different aspects of your life?
I would probably say that some days look better than others, or let's back it up. We're not going to use the word better because we're not going to put ourselves in that box. Some days look different than others. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I self-care is not a one size prescription. You know what I mean? Like there's a lot of different aspects. Like I said earlier, sometimes self-care is I'm not answering my phone and I'm snuggling in. And if you need to reach me, I'll catch you in a cool 12, you know, but you know, it really depends. I think that one of the like biggest tools that I've learned, not only from like being a mental health professional, but also doing work on myself and my own mental health with my therapist and mentors in the recovery community is, you know, honoring what it is that I need and honoring my body and my feelings in a way that I, you know, I'm going to take a moment and just say that I think that in the beginning of like my recovery journey, I did probably lean more to the side of some toxic positivity. I probably did lean more into the like, we just got to keep pushing. And, you know, it was, you know, things are feeling rough, but, you know, we got to look on the bright side and at least this and you got this. And so we're going to keep moving and no time to rest. Let's not fall, you know, blah, 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 blah. We got to do this. We got to do that. And I don't think that really, you know, after a while, it became clear that like doesn't serve me very well mm-hmm. because I'm not allowing, you know, the light is not as impactful if the dark is not recognized. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, it's just as bright. And I don't think that like I realized that and until life forced me to through a mm-hmm. series of, you know, I went through a series of pretty major deaths and losses in the last 5 years, which, you know, have impacted me greatly. And life kind of forced me to be able to see that the level of love and the level of care that I was giving myself was not gentle enough. That it was based in not allowing myself to feel the things that I probably needed to feel in situations for fear of if I get too sad or I get too angry, I'm not doing it right. Because that was in the back of my mind somewhere. And I don't know if that was a recovery message from somewhere or what. I don't know what, but I mean, probably.
It's kind of, I think it's kind of a cultural message, you know. Yeah, I feel like that's a lot of what we
message, in general, you know, like if it gets too far down, you're doing something wrong and you got to push harder. And so, you know, in the last in the last few years, I've really embraced the idea of checking in with myself and being more authentic with what I actually need as opposed to what I think that I should be doing, right? And that looks different. Like if I ask myself, like, do you have the energy or capacity to do this right now? And the answer is no, and you do it anyways, am I taking care of myself? No, I'm not, right? And that doesn't necessarily mean that, like, oh, I just get to, like, objectively, like, say no to a bunch of things and feel like it's okay because I've rooted it in, self-care. But, more so, like, being like, okay, like, what does your body need? What are your feelings need right now? Do you need to take a pause? Like, do you really want to be social tonight? Or do you feel like you're going to disappoint people if you don't, right? Or do you need to be alone tonight? Or is that just you trying to avoid something difficult that you think might actually be helpful, right? Yeah. So it's really like my self-care has evolved in a way of like just really trying to be more authentic, you know what I mean? Or like days where I'm feeling really sick or days where the grief becomes overwhelming, you know, and my body says, hey, this is what you have the capacity for. Mm. And we're not going to push harder. Okay. Can you do that for us? And for me to listen and say, okay, you know, today needs to be today. I need to rest, you know, and people may be disappointed or, you know, I may need to explain, but it's okay. You know, or like, oh, I'm afraid of something. And so I'm not going to go to this thing or I'm not going to go do this because I'm feeling some anxiety. So I'm going to withdraw, even though I know I have the energy and the capacity to do this. That's also not honoring me. You know what I mean? That's avoiding. So like really just getting more into self-reflection and authenticity, I feel like has become self-care. I work out. I try to eat healthy. I mean, I kind of have to because I've got these illnesses. But like, I spend time with my pets, you know, I go out with friends, I laugh, dance, you know what I mean? It's the things that I do on a regular basis are the things that I need as long as they're balanced and they're real and that I'm not doing things from a place that feels forced or I'm not doing things from a place of guilt or I'm not doing things from a place of defect, you know, but that I'm actually listening to myself and I'm hearing, you know, what it is that I'm saying internally.
And anybody that's listening and feels like that sounds like a lot, I can guarantee you is a part of the process. I think what I'm hearing is that throughout the experience, like you're listening, and in that listening, you're cultivating wisdom that allows for you to know or be more in tune with that internal compass. Because how else would you know, like, that you should have went out if you didn't have the experience of not going out, but then sitting at home, like, you know what? That's really what I needed, though. know, like, you wouldn't know that without that experience.
Trial and error.
Yeah.
The educational variety, if you will, right?
and the beauty is, like, we have the opportunity to have that experience now.
Yeah.
You know, so... Yeah, no, thanks for sharing and thanks for showing up for you because that allows for you to be here and show up for us as well as our audience. But yeah, so as we wrap, I think I want to ask the question. If you could go to any time period, including the future, which I'm throwing in these days. Yeah. So you can go to the past, you can go to the future, you can go to yesterday, you can go to tomorrow, you can go to a minute from now, but to grab an iteration of Mary. Grab that iteration and tell that iteration of Mary one piece of advice, nugget, love, whatever. What version of Mary would you grab and what would you tell her?
You know what's funny about that is that me and my two closest friends, who Bryce knows, my therapist, it's been almost an ongoing joke like the last month or so. Adolescent Mary keeps trying to come out and play. We got to tell her to get in the vaccine again. and so it's funny that you asked me that because I have realized that the adolescent version of me has a lot of healing to do still. Mm-hmm. And so I think that if I could take, you know, what I know now and kind of talk to that part of Mary, you know what I mean? It would, I mean, overall, I think it would just say like, hey, thank you for trying to make sure we survive. And thank you for doing the things that you think that we need to do in order to be okay. But I promise you that I got this and we don't need to do that anymore. I know that you think it's going to work, but it doesn't. And I know that you're scared, but we don't have to keep doing this because we know better now.
So good. I love there's been so many times that in this conversation that you've like modeled talking to yourself in a way that just feels so loving to me and feels so like, I feel like, I mean, the way you probably, I'm imagining the way you speak to the people that you love and also probably people that come to you in like a therapeutic relationship is the way you're speaking to yourself. And like, that's what's allowing that honesty and that like compassion that's just rooted in like, in truth and real love. And, you know, to be able to talk to adolescent you, not only like back then, but like the version that's still within you now is very cool. And I strive it's been a journey, to be like that. I believe it. I believe it. But that's the great thing about this community is that like we're all right. But the fact that you're able to show up now and like show what that looks like, you know, there might be somebody who's like, you know, maybe it's hoping recovery is something they can do someday, or somebody who's 2 days in or decades in and is like, it hasn't occurred to me to actually like grow in any other way other than just to stop doing this one thing. Like we're all on these different parts of our journey. And like when we can show up, when, you know, people like you have done such work and show up and show what that looks like and what it sounds like, is just, that's why it's so powerful to be in community and to just pay attention to, I don't know, everybody on all their journey. So thank you for doing that, for modeling that. I needed that.
And thank you for saying that.
Yeah. And thank you all for listening. And just thank you for being here. Everybody on this call, everybody that's listening to this episode, I think like just as this episode was where we all showed up and we were all spastic in our own right from our own experiences. I don't know about y'all, but I feel like a little bit more like grounded after this conversation.
I do too.
You know, I think me personally, like people just do it for me. Just kind of like sitting and having like one-on-one or intimate conversation with people like that brings me down in a good way. Mm-hmm. But I think it's just, you know, the further example of the power of community. And I think this is the perfect way to wrap this episode, seeing that Mary, you're a part of my community. Liz, you're a part of my community. And we just had this conversation where I brought two parts of my community together and introduced them to all you all listening to that community. So we thank you all for listening, and we will catch you on the next episode of Rise, Recover, Live.
So now you're excited. Bryce, Liz, how do I get involved with the Phoenix? Well, my friend, it is super simple. We actually have an app. Head over to the Google Play Store or the Apple App Store, or look in the show notes of this podcast, wherever you're listening to or watching this podcast, and go download the Phoenix app.
The Phoenix app makes it so easy to find classes that are near you or to access our virtual class schedule where you can hop on from the comfort of your home. You can also join our groups and have a conversation with someone from the Phoenix community from anywhere in the world. Please make sure that you join the podcast group where you can connect with Bryce and I and other listeners. Everything that you need is in the show notes. You can also head to our website at www.thephoenix.org. And maybe while you're there, you click the volunteer tab and get even more involved.